Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day back in 1957 that American country music singer Bobby Helms recorded which famous song? Was that A, Blueberry Hill, B, Blue Christmas, C, Ave Maria, or D, Jingle Bell Rock? 1957, Bobby Helms recording. What famous song was that anyway? And question number two. It was on this day, back in 1988, that teen pop star Debbie Gibson did what? Was it A, filled the family bathtub with fireworks, covered her body in protective clothing, and set up a video camera to record the event? Or was it B, held a seance at her Halloween party to contact the spirit of Liberace? Or was it C, rode on a skateboard while hanging on to the fender of a speeding truck? Or was it D, performed the world's highest concert at over 14,000 feet in the Alps? 1988, singer Debbie Gibson did what? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 29th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1956, that Maria Callas made her Metropolitan Opera debut in Norma. 1956, today. Callas was an American-born Greek soprano who was one of the most renowned and influential opera singers of the 20th century. And it was 19 years ago today, 2002, that U.S. President George W. Bush signed an act that renamed the Oakwood Postal Station in Los Angeles the Nat King Cole Post Office, 2002, today.
You're gone, you're gone. So make your feet quiet, they'll be tied by and by. Hold on, you little doggies, hold on.
Yolo lady, yolo yady, yolo yady, yolo yady, yolo yady, yolo yady, yolo lady.
And in country music news, we raise the question, since it was on this very day, October 29th, back in 1936, that Hank Snow made his first recordings, Lonesome Blue Yodel and Prison Cowboy, who is Hank Snow anyway? Well, as noted by Charles Wolfe in an article published in the Encyclopedia of Country Music by Oxford University Press, Hank Snow was a singer-songwriter who was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1979. Snow was undeniably the most successful country music star to come out of Canada during the industry's formative years. Clarence Eugene Hank Snow also emerged as one of the most distinctive stylists, one of the best songwriters, one of the most prolific recording artists, one of the finest guitarists, and one of the most masterful businessmen in the modern industry. Through his career, he never turned his back on the classic Jimmy Rogers style that first made him famous, But he has also experimented with Latin rhythms, jazz, blues, Hawaiian styles, recitations, the mambo, and gospel songs. The some 840 commercial recordings he made between 1936 and 1985 form one of the largest discographies in the music business. Nobody was surprised when he was elected to the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1978 and the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1979. His had been a long, torturous road to Nashville. It began far above the northeast boundaries of Maine in the windswept village of Brooklyn in Nova Scotia. He was one of four children, and his life became difficult when he was only eight and his parents divorced. That event plunged him into a series of misadventures that resembled something out of a Dickens novel. He was sent off to his paternal grandparents, but he routinely ran away and made his way back to his mother. When she remarried, Snow found himself dealing with a violent stepfather. To escape this abuse as a teenager, Snow went to sea working on a fishing trawler in the wild North Atlantic, where he entertained the crew by singing and playing the harmonica. At home, his mother let him listen to Victrola records by the new singer Jimmy Rogers. By 1933, Snow, armed with a mail-order Timothy Eaton guitar, began singing over CHNS at Halifax. He also met and married a local Dutch-Irish girl named Minnie. The young couple soon obtained a serious radio job sponsored by the laxative company Crazy Water Crystals, and Snow began billing himself Hank the Yodeling Ranger after learning that Jimmy Rogers had been made an honorary Texas Ranger. In October of 1936, Snow traveled to Montreal to make his first records for Canadian Bluebird, an RCA budget imprint. Lonesome Blue Yodel and Prison Cowboy, a series of releases followed, including hits such as Blue Velvet Band, Galveston Rose, and My Blue River Rose. All told, he made some 90 recordings for Canadian Bluebird between 1936 and 49, but only a handful were then released in the United States. After a couple of abortive stays in Hollywood and West Virginia, Snow finally was able to crack the American market in 1948. An expert writer, he often toured with a trick writing show featuring his horse Pawnee. He was a modest success in Dallas on the Big D Jamboree and contacted Ernest Tubb, a fellow admirer of Rogers. Tubb liked Snow's work very much and began to pester the Grand Ole Opry staff on his behalf. The Opry finally relented and invited Snow to join. He was introduced on stage by Hank Williams. For a time, it seemed that Snow's stay would be short. He seemed unable to score a hit or get audience response. Then his first RCA Victor American hit came along, I'm Movin' On, a piece that Snow's producer had not even wanted to cut. The song rode the chart for 44 weeks in 1950 and 51. It was followed by two more number ones, The Golden Rocket, 1950, and Rumba Boogie in 1951. These were his career songs, and for the next 5 years, he averaged two or three top 10 hits a year. He did not crack the top five again until 74, when Hello Love topped the charts. In addition to recording distinctive hits like these, Snow became one of the first country singers to see the LP as the basic creative unit and created some of the first theme or concept albums. He also utilized his considerable skills as a guitarist to do a series of duets with Chet Atkins. Throughout the 60s and 70s, Snow helped show the line against rock and pop's assault on traditional country music. He traveled widely, including to Vietnam, and became a fixture on the Opry. In 1977, he recorded his 104th LP for RCA Victor, Still Moving On, proving himself an apt title for an artist who gave longevity a new and dramatic meaning. Hank Snow died at age 85 in late December of 1999. Joshua Bell performing Puccini's O Mio Bambino Caro. And since it was on this very day, back in 1964, that pop singer Linda Ronstadt made her operatic debut in New York City with La Boheme, let's explore that connection for our classical music news item. It's entitled Diva Linda. After mastering rock, country, folk rock, pop, punk rock, standard big band ballads, and Gilbert and Sullivan, only opera was left. So Linda Ronstadt is making her debut as Mimi in La Boheme. This is written by Linda Saunders, Saturday Review, December 1984. I'm absolutely certain that Puccini would be happier with a contemporary approach than one that puts him into a museum, says Wilfred Leach, director of the current New York Shakespeare Festival production of La Boheme, starring Linda Ronstadt. I don't think he's ready for that. Adapting the classics to suit contemporary taste is a hotly debated topic these days in opera circles, and a lot of people are wondering whether it is necessary or even proper to alter a composer's work in any way. But for Leach, as for Joseph Papp, founder and producer of the Shakespeare Festival, wondering whether or not it is proper to put classic work into terms that appeal to modern audiences is like wondering whether or not to breathe. Musical theater is not exactly alien territory for the festival either, as evidenced by productions ranging from Hair to A Chorus Line to Three Penny Opera, not to mention Pirates of Penzance, which Leach directed and which starred Kevin Kline and Linda Ronstadt. But opera? That's different, isn't it? Most people seem to think so, though efforts to explain how it differs from musical theater or operetta can get quite baroque. Only one thing is certain: opera is sung by opera singers. Obviously, not anymore. In this Boheme, Linda Ronstadt heads a cast of pop-trained singers. Sure, you can reproduce a Boheme production that's just like the original one, but what you can't reproduce is the audience. Works such as La Boheme were the popular music theater of their day, and that's how their audiences saw them. Ronstadt's success as Mabel in the Shakespeare Festival's 1980 Pirates of Penzance makes it something less than a shock to find her on the opera stage now. But it's still a curious development. What is a nice girl from Tucson with a conventional musical upbringing in the bars and clubs of the Southwest doing in a place like this? Ronstadt says it all started with her father. He really gave me a keen appreciation for every kind of music, she has explained, always saying there's great music in everything. In high school, she studied voice, which naturally included some classical singing. But in the mid-60s, it wasn't classical music, but folk, country, and rock and roll that won most girls' hearts. So she started singing on the local club circuit and eventually moved to Los Angeles. She released her first solo album, Hand Sewn, Homegrown, in 1969, and for the next few years continued to build a pop, rock, country audience. Not counting the movie version of Pirates, Puccini's main competition for Ronstadt's attention was the album she made with Nelson Riddle and his orchestra called What's New, released last year. Its success led to a second album with Riddle, Lush Life, to be released early next year. It's clear that the question to ask of Linda Ronstadt is not so much what's new as what's next. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Coping with COVID-19 Through Music. International study investigates the role of music in regulating emotions in times of crisis. This is published on this 26th of July, 2021, by the Max Planck Gesellschaft, mpg.de, by Melanie Vald Verham. Beyond the immediate health risk of the COVID-19 pandemic, the containment measures it necessitates have brought with them a number of other stressors that can undermine individual and collective well-being. As part of an international research project, the Max Planck Institute for Empirical Aesthetics investigated whether musical engagement is an effective strategy for socio-emotional coping during lockdown. The project team collected demographically representative samples from 6 countries on 3 continents during the first lockdown in April and May 2020. Over 5,000 people from Germany, France, Great Britain, India, Italy, and the USA were asked in an online survey about how they engage with music during the crisis. More than half of the respondents reported using music to cope with emotional and social stressors. It is worth noting that music itself wasn't the coping aid, but rather music-related behaviors, specifically the way people have adapted their musical behaviors during the crisis. In this regard, music listening and music making appear to provide different coping potentials, explains Melanie Vald Verham. People who experienced increased negative emotions due to the pandemic were found to engage with music primarily as a way to regulate depression, fear, and stress, especially via music listening. People who reported more positive emotions overall were found to use music largely as a replacement for social interaction. Not just music listening, but also music making gave them a sense of belonging to a community. Making music, moreover, served as a method for self-reflection. The novel genre of Corona music is especially noteworthy. This term refers to musical responses to the coronavirus crisis, such as newly composed pieces, theme playlists, and famous well-known songs whose lyrics were changed to fit the pandemic. The research team found that the more interested respondents were in Corona music, the more music listening and making seemed to help them cope emotionally and socially. These findings underline the importance of real-time creative responses in times of crises. New Corona songs offered a much-needed opportunity for collective response, and this made them even more useful for strengthening resilience of both the individual and the community. These findings, therefore, contribute to ongoing debates about the importance of music and culture in society. Fleetwood Mac's Albatross introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled The Right Stuff, spelled W-R-I-T-E. Lindsey Buckingham. Ahead of his new solo album, out September 17, the legendary Fleetwood Mac guitarist shares the stories behind his most memorable riffs. This is written by Maureen Lee Lenker, published in Entertainment Weekly, October 2021. Here are two of the songs that Buckingham talks about. Trouble, from 1981. Buckingham's first solo effort was a direct result of Fleetwood Mac's decision to pivot away from the more experimental sound he loves. I realized the only way for me to keep exploring the more esoteric side of where the art lived, for me, was to start making solo albums, he explains. In Fleetwood Mac, I was called upon to do the rock side of things, but not necessarily the mid-tempo, pretty stuff. I had that in me, and Trouble was a good representation of that. I was covering a broader landscape musically. And then there's 2021's On the Wrong Side. I realized that I was subconsciously at first wanting to make it more of a pop album than what I had done before, he says, of his new self-titled record. You can make connections between On the Wrong Side and Go Your Own Way in terms of tone, vocals, and guitar solos. But working with the band is a more conscious, verbalized process. When I'm in the studio by myself, it's like painting. All of those touches in this song revealed themselves as time went by. The sense of what you can discover is more nuanced. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1957 that American country music singer Bobby Helms recorded which famous song? Was that A, Blueberry Hill, B, Blue Christmas, C, Ave Maria, or D, Jingle Bell Rock? Correct answer? Answer D, Jingle Bell Rock. As noted in AllMusic.com, artist biography by John Bush, though his name is unfamiliar to most, Bobby Helms rules the airways every year around December 25th. His single, Jingle Bell Rock, first became a hit in 1957, and it reappeared on the charts for the following 5 years to become an all-time Christmas classic. Before he was pigeonholed, though, Helms had a successful country career with two number one hits to his credit. Born on August 15, 1933, in Bloomington, Indiana, Helms first performed on his father Fred Monroe's Country Jamboree, singing while brother Freddie played guitar. The Helms brothers, as they were billed, became a regional attraction. Bobby later cut a single called Tennessee Rock and Roll, but then returned to Bloomington to appear on the Hayloft Frolic television show. While on the program, he was encouraged to go to Nashville to sing background vocals on an Ernest Tubb session. Tubb recommended him to Decca Records, and the label signed him in 1956. His debut single, Fraulein, initially flopped in January 57, but then hit number one on the country chart in April. The song also hit the pop top 40 in July of 57. Although Decca released Helms' Jingle Bell Rock only 2 days before Christmas, 1957, the single still peaked at number 6 on the pop chart. Decca reissued his Christmas hit each year from 1960 to 62 with diminishing returns. Subsequent new material from Helms had little success. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1988 that teen pop star Debbie Gibson did what? Did she A, fill the family bathtub with fireworks, covered her body in protective clothing, and set up a video camera to record the event? Was it B, held a seance at her Halloween party to contact the spirit of Liberace? Was it C, rode on a skateboard while hanging onto the fender of a speeding truck? Or was it D, performed the world's highest concert at over 14,000 feet in the Alps? Correct answer. Answer B, she held a seance at her Halloween party to contact the spirit of Liberace, and also to contact the spirit of Sid Vicious, by the way. As noted in a May 1988 Orlando Sentinel article, Gibson said that on the typical teen side of her life, when we go out, there's usually about 10 of us, we go to the movies, Gibson said in a Star Hits magazine interview. After a movie, we usually go back to somebody's house and talk. Last Halloween, I had a party where we had a seance. We tried to get Liberace and Sid Vicious, not necessarily in that order, evidently, and no follow-ups on why and whether those attempts were successful, although we did learn that Gibson was fascinated with Liberace and even had one of his Baldwin grand pianos decorated with mirrors and crystals in one of her home's piano room. In concluding today's program, let's see if we can conjure up Liberace to perform an appropriate November Holloway song for us.
Turkey in the straw, complete with variations and all the trimmings.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.